I wanted to be a multimillionaire.
I want to be the judge of how successful or unsuccessful I'm going to
take
be.
Take control of your life.
I meant the hustle was still in me.
So good day, people. So today we have here with us Mr. Stefan William of Cruise Lounge. Is that to pronounce the proper way of the business? Crew Lounge?
Crew Lounge, correct.
Crew Lounge. So I want to get into it, man. So this is our third time actually speaking with each other, but you're going to basically learn more about him same time I am, real time. So I want to dig a little deep, my brother, man. So born and raised where?
Born in Connecticut, lived there for several years, for a very long time until high school, left there and went to Los Angeles for high school, believe it or not. Played basketball out there. From there, I went to a little bit of junior college. From there, I went to Atlanta to Morehouse for college, played basketball there for a little while, left Morehouse and—
Get closer to Mike, please.
Went to back up to New York.
So craziest thing is, right, I'm from Connecticut.
Where? What part?
So Bridgeport.
New Haven.
New Haven, of course.
That's crazy.
You know, now we're going to get this. This is really about to get interesting because I know what he's from. And he knows what I'm from.
Facts.
So the story's going to get real good. How was it growing up in New Haven, man? Born mom and dad in the house or?
Just mom. Mom, my aunts, and my grandmother. It was smooth, man. I'm an only child. Hung out with all my cousins all the time. So it was like, yo, you know, I wasn't really by myself. I was always with my cousins.
With family.
Exactly. It was a good time. Lived there till 16. So for real, like, it was a good time. I think I was just learning myself as I, you know, I think you become, you learn who you are, rather, by the time you get to high school. So for me, it's like the kiddie version of me is Connecticut, and then the adult version of me started in high school, which started in Los Angeles. So
for those that don't know, could you describe a little bit about New Haven, Connecticut?
What's crazy is I say New Haven is kind of like West Palm. It's very small in a sense. It's actually smaller than West Palm, though, believe it or not, a lot smaller. Everybody knows everybody. Like, you can't go to the grocery store without seeing your mom's friend or your cousin's cousins. Everybody knows each other from across town. Things get a little shaky in the city. I ain't even going to lie. It's definitely a very—
Whaley Ave.
Listen, it could be super dangerous. I'm not even going to hold you or lie to you. You know, it's dangerous as fuck, for real.
Yeah.
Like, it certainly is not. It's not easy. People hear Connecticut and they be like, "Oh, you're rich and it's a bunch of white people." And I'm like, "Nah,
not where I'm from."
Word, it's niggas where I'm from. Word, yeah. So, you know, but
and they with it.
Word, all of it, for real. So that's New Haven for you.
So but growing up in New Haven, Connecticut, with a single mom, only child. How was that process for you? Like, you know, but you had a lot of cousins around the area anyway.
Yeah,
so
definitely have a lot of cousins. Definitely have a lot of family and friends. For me, I played basketball. So as dangerous as I want to say things may or may not be, you know, I was always into basketball. So I was always out the way on a traveling team or somewhere in the state or another state for that matter, playing basketball. I spent a lot of time in New York as well during those early years. So I was always on the move.
Was father involved or just not involved completely?
I didn't meet my dad until I was like maybe 18, 19, for real. You know,
wow.
Yeah, man. One of those.
One of those, man. How was that experience meeting him?
It was smooth, man. It was a good time, for real. You know, exactly what you would expect from it. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, this is who you are. Cool. So it wasn't—
Was it just you two by yourselves, or was like the mom, like the whole family?
My sister was there too. So I have a sister from his side.
Okay.
So I've known her growing up. So her and I decided to link up together and go do it together. For real.
And is she from the community or?
Nah, so my sister is also from Connecticut as well.
In Connecticut. Mm-hmm. So you guys were a chance to meet. So now, how did you end up in the West Coast? How did that move happen?
My mom relocated to Los Angeles really just for like a better opportunity for real. She got a promotion with work and she took the opportunity. So for real, we just moved out there for better opportunity.
So from New Haven, Connecticut to Los Angeles.
Word.
That culture shock.
Facts. Definitely a culture shock. Got a lot introduced to really like the finer things in life, if you will. I mean, Los Angeles, believe it or not, like, you know, you could be at dinner back then and like sitting next to one of your favorite celebrities. Like that used to happen all the time, for real. Mm. I mean, and you didn't even have to be anywhere special or anywhere expensive. Like you could pull up to the light and be like, oh shit, that's such and such.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we would go to dinners a lot and see a bunch of celebrities. And then the people that, you know, my mom worked with and worked for, you know, they were also in that industry as well. So it's like Los Angeles, man, a Range Rover, a BMW, and a Benz is like
was a Honda
Accord. Yeah, yeah. So it went from literally Honda Accords to like Range Rovers and everything. So
in the everyday life.
Word.
And then, but how was high school training? You played ball?
I played basketball in Los Angeles. I think that was the best thing for me between being super tall, being able to put that shit on, if you will, and being able to play basketball. Those three things helped me out in high school because it was like you went from majority black and white to majority Latino and black and no white, really. Like, for real.
Well, for the area you were
in. For the area that I was in, right.
So, but meeting, like, how was it easy to make friends? Was it easy to be in a
super
community?
Super easy. Like, again, you know, first day of school, I still have some of the friends that I met that first day of school, you know what I mean?
Wow.
First, second, and third day of school for high school, I'm still legitimately best friends with some of those guys. So for me, like I said, playing basketball, I was on the basketball team the next day. Like, I was already 6 feet and some inches tall, so I think like 6'2" to be exact in sophomore year. So word, I was where I needed to be. Like,
so getting in,
yeah.
You already from balling from already from Connecticut, which a lot of people don't know. We got hopers in Connecticut,
yeah,
man.
For sure, man. I think the year that I left high school, my next year, that school won like the state championship that year. Mm. So for real.
So and then growing up in LA. Like you said a lot, the L.A. culture, you went from black and white to basically Hispanic and black. Like, how? Give me a little bit more about that culture shock, you know, the experience, the food, everything.
I think that's why still to this day I'm very diverse because Los Angeles is very diverse. You know, it wasn't anything out the norm, bro, for real. Like, I mean, it was more so like, okay, like, it just taught me that there's a bunch of different people in the world. Like, not everybody looks like me and not everybody looks white or is white for that matter, right? Like, kind of grow up and you think Caribbean, black, American, you know, and then you go to Los Angeles and it's like completely different. I had a bunch of Asian kids in my class. Like, So it was just very diverse. It was like a little bit of everybody. So it was almost like a little better, if you will, because it was like, all right, I'm around a little bit of everybody and we all bring something to the table.
What kind of work your mom was doing around that time? You said it kind of brought her.
She was in hotels. So she was the food and beverage director for like a hotel, like it was a top of the line hotel, if you will, that basically in charge of anything to do with food and beverage, from room service to the bar, et cetera.
So the hospitality space.
Literally,
so
yeah.
Now it's making more sense just learning that. That part of you and the experience also, your experience with sports in LA and Connecticut, is there a big difference or pretty consistent?
Nah, pretty consistent, man. Just because of the talent that I was around. So it was pretty consistent.
Did you stay connected with your father in that transitioning?
I'm sorry, what was
Did
that?
Did you stay connected with your father in LA and...
I actually didn't meet my dad until I was already in Los Angeles. So at that time, I was like a senior in high school. So I got done with my senior year of high school, and maybe like 2 years later is when I moved to Atlanta. He was in Atlanta, so we kind of started connecting then.
And then what was the decision of going to Morehouse?
Shit crazy. I was going to sign with the school in Los Angeles, and then I went and visited. Like, after the season, we had made it to, like, damn near the state championship game. It was a long season, so after season was over, I went to Atlanta to visit one of my close friends, and he went to Morehouse. That shit was crazy. Yeah. Like, if you want to talk about it.
I visited several times.
Listen, if you want to talk about like a culture change or just a shock, it was like literally going to Atlanta and seeing Atlanta and Morehouse. It was like, oh, nah, I'm trying to come here for real.
This is it. I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm home.
Yeah, for sure. So I wasn't even recruited there. I sent my tapes and stuff to the coach there, and, you know, he was fucking with me between grades and, like, you know, just my skill level. He was fucking with us. And, yeah, man, that's how I ended up at Morehouse.
So was grades always important to you as an athlete?
No, I just needed to make sure I was able to play. I was eligible.
I understand. I know the feeling.
B plus, B minus would be excellent, you know.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Wherever I could get in to play the average, game, man.
Average. I mean, grade-wise, I always say, you know, the only time you could really be average, if you ever would be average, is when you was getting some grades. Because at that point, I think grades is just grades. It just shows what you're able to do and what you're getting. But, yeah, man, just the average student.
Just average student. But now the culture shock. So you went from, because I lived in Atlanta also. You went from Connecticut to L.A. to Connecticut to L.A. to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that day you walked into that campus.
My mom dropped me off at school. I'm like 20 years old and I'm with the shits. Leave me be.
I'm out of here.
My sneaker boxes. I was tight about having to share a room for a little bit. That was probably the biggest thing that I had an issue with, for real. Just having to share a room with a roommate. Like,
oh, yeah, you're only child, so yeah.
And then it's like an all boys school. So it was just like, that was probably the biggest takeaway for me, or the biggest thing to come to terms with. But for those that don't know, you know, Spelman, I'm
it's
sure
right around the corner.
I can't even say around the corner. It's like across the street.
Right.
Clark, across the street. So it's like, you know, a triangle of schools, if you will. And from there, it was just like, all right, bet. Like, this not so bad after all. I thought it was going to be like a secluded campus with all boys.
Right.
And, you know. And then, you know, having...
Because you guys also do co-ed classes at times, right?
So, yeah, you can do co-ed classes. And once I learned that, I went and got me some Morehouse classes. I got me some Clark classes. And I got me some Spelman classes. I never only took classes at Morehouse. Like, I always balanced it out.
What a coincidence. But what about the Atlanta culture now? That's a whole different experience.
Listen, I'm in school. I get to Atlanta. It's like 2006.
I was just leaving.
2006 was like, shit was lit. Like, it was different, you know, being by yourself. You know, you go away to school for that experience to, like, you know, really be by yourself and figure out who you are. And I think Atlanta, it has so much freedom and so much lit shit to do that you could really, like, test the waters. Word.
And even friends are from different places, and they have different experience that you could interact with, man. And I know back in those days, Atlanta was definitely on fire. That's when it was super, super, because I think I was just leaving Atlanta around that time, 2006, 2007. I was moving to Palm Beach.
Okay.
And I know, you know, from being on that strip where the barbershop is, where Mr. Everything was, and... You know, that whole strip. I was just telling one of my homeboys about that. I said, you ain't never had an experience until you go to a haircut and walk down on Mr. Everything and get a nice, man. Atlanta was everything around that time. But before I go into my Atlanta experience, making friends down there in Georgia and Morehouse, how easy was that for you?
Again, transition is always good for me because playing basketball. So, you know, I was on the basketball team, and, you know, collegiate sports is no joke. So, you know, first day in, you meeting the team, you know, it was a couple of other transfers, met some really cool people, like, for real. My roommate actually, like, I walked into the room and every pair of sneakers that I had, he had. So it was crazy. And
so that kind of made it okay. That's crazy how that
literally,
culture.
Like, still to this day, that's literally, like, that's my right-hand man. Like, literally, that's my best friend. So what I thought would be a terrifying experience of having a roommate, we was only roommates for like maybe a couple of weeks. I'm not even gonna hold you. Maybe 2-3 weeks tops, maybe a month. I told the basketball team, being on the basketball team rather, I was able to pull some strings with the coach and have my own room. So it worked out, but we were still
kicking it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. First person you met. And you guys had something that you guys, you know, could relate to each other with, when it comes to sneakers.
Exactly. He didn't play basketball with me, but he was a transfer as well from Hampton. So he went to Hampton. So it was just like, yo, like from there, we both transferred in because I was transferring in from Los Angeles. And yeah, man, it was up since then, literally. Yeah.
Did you finish? You did all 4 years and more?
Yep. So I did 4 years, finished school there, got done with there, and moved back to New York.
So, but before we get into moving back up north, man, just how was those 4 years of that college life, of that Atlanta life, things that you've learned, things that you experienced?
And that's, I feel like that's where I became who I am, for real. I feel like I literally did a 180. Like, I went from being from this little small town of just knowing everyone, like, you could throw a pebble at their house, to, like, Los Angeles of everything so big, to now Atlanta, where it's like, whoa.
It was definitely, like, you know,
you could go out when you want, you could party when you want, you could do what you want. Like, literally, like, it was a matter of really, like, finding balance in life. Like, all right, you got all this power. What you gonna do with it? You
power
got all
and
this
access.
Freedom. Yeah, and really, it's not even, I would really say freedom. You got all this freedom, and it's just like, what you gonna do? Because you still got these classes, you still got basketball practice. You got girls, you got all the distractions. So it's like, yo, what's up? What you gonna do? You gonna fold or you gonna figure it out?
What was homecoming culture like?
Homecoming is like, first, the best part about homecoming is, what are you gonna wear to homecoming? Like, that's like better than the first day of school outfit, for real. Like, sheesh. What are you wearing to homecoming? And what we drink?
What, like, we drinking?
I swear to God, homecoming is so much fun that even still at this age, I still go to homecoming from time to time and have a blast. It's the best day of your life.
Yeah, how would you describe homecoming culture? And because you guys do your homecoming, not just Morehouse, right?
Yeah, so it's Morehouse and Spelman's homecoming. Every so often, Clark and Spellhouse, as we call it, we would have our homecoming the same weekend. That doesn't happen often. I feel like they give us that every several years, just because they know how ignorant it is. But yeah, man, homecoming is a good time. It's a day of the football game, the halftime show, really the halftime show, and just drinking on campus. Just drinking.
How was the club scene back then around homecoming? Or even around 2006, 2007, 2008.
I turned 21 in, what was that, 2007.
Because so you weren't drinking before 21,
I
right?
wasn't drinking before 21.
Nah, wow, that's like, impressive.
I was playing basketball. I wasn't into anything unnecessary. I was straight forth. I remember sitting in the car and at 11:56, it's like, I bet I'm about to walk in the club for the first time. Like, yeah, like, I wasn't using a fake ID, so clubbing for me back then was picture perfect, because at that point, like, it was all new to me. It was like, I'm in the club. Like, I had a list of all the lit clubs that I wanted to go to, like Compound, Velvet Room, Jermaine Dupri had a club. So it was like, yo, for me personally, it was a great time, because I felt like I did it the right way. I waited till I was
20. That's crazy. Yeah. So your first drink and club experience.
Don't get me wrong. I was definitely in college partying with my college friends, like at 19 and 20, because at that point I was in college at that point. So like my teammates who were 21, I would drink with them from time to time. But it I swear to God, one night I got drunk off of Smirnoff and I didn't drink from then
on.
Oh
my God.
Listen, like, my coach looked at me the next day and said,
this ain't for you.
Yeah, like, don't hang out with those niggas again.
Stay in your lane.
The club scene from 2007 to 2010 was just pure.
Club 112 already closed down at that point.
Had just closed down, literally, but you still had Velvet Room. And you still had Compound, and you had like all of the strip clubs, you know. So it was even in Atlanta, like, the biggest thing really is strip clubs. So I think at that point it like became like that transition of clubbing
and strip clubs.
But knowing the strip clubs was there, but I didn't even go to the strip club because now I'm in college and I'm broke, so I'm not going to the strip club with the dope boys.
It's pretty intense.
Yeah. So
I heard it was pretty intense out there. I've heard about a couple of them. But now, So you say you went from, well, in Atlanta, what are some of the different things that you believe that you learned living there that you carried on with you today?
Just structure, man. Structure and balance, for real. Like I said, having all that freedom, not being at home with your parents, nobody telling you to do your homework, just really balance, you know, and structure.
But where does that come from? Because every kid, every student that goes into school don't just have that discipline and structure. Nah, where does that come from?
You got a $30,000 a year tuition for starters, especially because I stopped playing basketball after a while. So I took on that responsibility ourselves. You know, that's one. Two, you know, just knowing, like, don't fuck this up. Like, don't fuck this up, especially being at Morehouse. Like, you know, not a lot of people get into the school, you know, and I didn't necessarily get in just because of grades. I got in really because of my athletic abilities. So it was like, don't fuck this up. Like,
so the Morehouse standard really kept you afloat.
Yeah, like, I remember walking in the door one day and the teacher, like, I had a female teacher and I didn't hold the door for her and I didn't open the door for her. She dead ass talked. She stopped me right there and said, young man. Like, and, you know, she pressed me about not opening the door for her and not holding the door for her at that. And still to this day, I don't care how far away from you you are. Like, I'm going to open a door for a woman if she's walking out and I'm going to hold the door for the person behind me. Like, so it just gave me character. It gave me balance. Like, it just it really instilled to me that, like, yo, you have an opportunity here and you could live a really good life if you do what you need to do.
Was it just the Morehouse way? Was it just the community? Was it mentors there?
I would say it's just the Morehouse way. It's definitely the community. It's definitely the teachers there. It's definitely the other students that are there. Like, at that time, like, Morehouse was truly about the sacredhood, if you will, of you're at Morehouse. Like, you're a Morehouse man. Like, they teach you that you're the best guy out there, and, you know, you do with that what you want. But, like, you are at the top. I mean, for us, Morehouse is like a Yale, for that matter, or a Harvard, for that matter. So it's like, yo, these kids aren't here for athletics or whatever. They're really here for, like, on some smart people shit type. So I think that just having that opportunity is what made me say, like, nah, I want to be like those guys, because those were the kids that came from families that, like, bro, I didn't realize that people were married at that point. Like, my friends in college, their parents were still married. And that was the craziest shit to me. I'm like, bro, you like 21, 22, 23, your parents, like, still 19. Like, yo, they parents. I never seen parents marry. Don't get me wrong. I have a couple aunts in them that did have marriages like that. But, like, people in college, parents were still married. And I was like, yo, you guys have balance. Like, y'all don't just have balance. Like, I had rich black friends. You feel me? Like, some of my friends was rich back then. And I was just like, yo, that's crazy because of what your parents did.
You know, that's so crazy. Like, to hear that, one of the biggest culture shocks you got when you were in school at Morehouse, that parents are actually still married.
Facts.
But, you know, me hearing you say that, I can only imagine how many people actually go through that. Because that's not in our culture, that's not a normal thing.
Nah.
But for that to be one of your culture shocks to actually also help you out.
A lot of them were. Like, a lot of my friends' parents were still married. Like, you know, you had homecoming, for example, and their parents are down there together and you meeting your friend's parents. It's like, oh,
this is real.
This is serious. Yeah.
Like, did this give you a lot of clarity? Like, it's attainable?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. You know, I think that, you know, it gave me a lot of visibility to just say, like, damn, family really is important. Like, you know, family is important from the cousins aspect, right? The brothers aspect. But, like, now this is like household family, like togetherness family, like having two incomes instead of one. You see what I'm saying? So it's certainly it was certainly shocking, to say the least.
And you said in Atlanta, you also, that's when you had the chance to go meet your father. Was that some of the reason of, like, hey, you know what, let me connect with my family a little bit more? Or
you know, every kid wants to know their dad. So I think for me, that was just more so now my grandmother instilling in me that, like, parents, regardless of what the situation is, you know, you give everybody a chance. You know what I mean? If somebody asks you to forgive them, you're supposed to forgive them. Like, you know what I mean? So I think for me, that was more so just closure for my own sake, if you will, because it was just like growing up, it was like, damn, I don't know my dad. Like now it's like, cool. But I can't really say that the two had correlation or were connected to each other.
You say your grandmother, you know, instilled some of that in you. How was your relationship with your grandmother?
A1, still to this day. I'm my mom's mom. Like, that's my bestie, for real. She gives me a lot of wisdom. You know, I learned things from her time, her perspective. You know, she grew up in the 40s and 50s and 60s at that age, right? So it was like, I feel like I learned a lot from her.
So give me some examples of, like, what you think you've learned from her compared to today's time, or how you can use some of it.
Not being late, making sure my hands aren't ashy and putting lotion on them because I'm 6'8", and, you know, I can't be this tall and not having lotion on.
Oh, boy.
And then the third thing is making sure that you always look your best. You know, a lot of my friends and family will say, like, you pull up on Steph or he pull up on you, you better be dressed, ready to go to prom. I think the way you carry yourself and the way you look, it says a lot about you. You know, you wake up every day, and what she taught me is you never know who you're going to meet that day.
So the thing is, like you just spoke about, the standard and the knowledge that your grandmother gave you, she passed it down to you. So it was like a back and forth between your mom and her, just giving you, instilling in you that those values, those principles?
Yeah, definitely. My mom and my two aunts and my grandmother really raised me, for real. So it's like everything that they taught me over the years. I mean, I'm 37 now. Like, still to this day, I learn a lot from them. Still to this day, I talk to them a lot. Like, I feel like my two aunts are also my second and third mom, if you will. You know, so between the four of them, I certainly can say that they've all given me the wisdom and knowledge that I have, or just my foundation, if you will.
Did you have a lot of men in your life growing up?
Yeah, believe it or not, some very cool guys. And they, too, were successful Black men. So it's like, okay, I knew success from a singles person, right? Like, okay, individual-wise, I knew success from individuals. And then by the time I got to college, I felt like I learned success together in family, like with a mom and a dad together. You see what I'm saying? So yeah, definitely had some really good guys growing up in my life that still to this day I talk to.
So you left Atlanta, went to New York. Why'd you move up there?
I moved to New York because at that point I met my wife in college. So we had been dating through college, and then when college was over, she had already moved back to New York for school. So she went to Georgia Tech, and from there, when she went back to New York, it was like, damn, do I move to Los Angeles or do I pursue this relationship that I have? At that point, we had been together for a few years. So I was like, nah, I'm going to pursue the relationship. So I went to New York, and I also, one of my aunts, she was able to give me my first job at Chase. So I was like, shit, bet. Like, wow. I got a job, got wifey, like, I'm slide. Went and got a crib in New York, got a high rise, and it was up.
Why was it so important for you to make that decision to go stick with the one that you have already?
Honestly, because, shit, funny story, like, one of our first few dates, I can't even say one of our first few dates, I'm lying. It was a point where after we were dating, like, for a little while, she took me to her aunt's house. Well, really her uncle. Her uncle's house, who had two boys at the time. Well, have two boys, and they're married. Bro, I pull up to the house, and it looks like I feel like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Why? I just visualized that when you said it.
The house was crazy. And I tell them this all the time. Like, I literally tell them this all the time. Like, they are successful, and they had this house. And I just look like, oh, my God. I started realizing that her whole family is like that. Like, not in a sense of necessarily was it just a big house, but it was like, yo, like, they're married, they have their kids, they have their families, they're a real family. Like,
structure is super important to you.
Yeah, like, structure. I'm a Taurus, so, you know, structure is everything to me. Like, everything's about, you know, just structure for me and being balanced.
Do you believe you learn a lot more when you see it?
Yeah, I'm one of those learners, like, I'll learn from just seeing some shit and watching some shit, whether it be up close or from afar. Like, you know, I could watch something that I think a really cool guy is doing and be like, yo, like, I like how he move. I don't got to go tell him I like it, but I could see what he does from afar and kind of, like, take little pointers from him. You know what I mean? Like, it can only make you better.
Yeah, so when you locked in, so you saw your wife, that your wife today, but, you know, lady you were dating with, you made that decision. And one of the inspiration you got from making that decision, because you saw her family, you saw, and I, you know, you saw, you're able to see someone else doing it.
Right.
And you saw the importance of doing something like that. Was she already, I mean, you guys were dating, already locked in. Did you guys already started talking about marriage and all those things? Or
nah, she just used to always tell me I would never date for more than 5 years if we wasn't, like, going somewhere with it. So it was like, I always knew I had a 5-year cap with her, and I was already at, like, 3.5. So it was like, my boy, what are we doing?
Because the time is coming up.
Listen, for real. And I think I went to a barbecue one time, and her cousin said to me, she pulled me to the side, like, what we doing? Like, you know, so it was like one of those. It wasn't no pressure. It was just kind of like, yo, like, They it's no bullshitting, like, it's no fucking around. And I like that, because it's just like, yo, here you have this beautiful girl at the time who, you know, like, we gonna make sure she, you know, what we doing? Like, you out here,
you're not coming player, to play with her,
or you out here to make moves, you know? So I like that, you know what I mean? Like, her family pressed me, and I like that, because if they didn't press me, who knows? I might have been the typical nigga that, you know, I'm accustomed to knowing that's what I knew, right? Like, you know, having a kid or moving on or being there until you're not there no more. So I like that. But again, that helped me with balance too.
So that's so dope, man, just hearing that. Like, because I don't think I've ever heard, of course, I believe this happens often, where the woman actually start off like, yo, listen, this is that window. Like, after we get to this 5th year, we've dated, we maximize the dating experience, and what's next? So was her parents pressing you or anything like that, or?
Nah, her family, everybody was good. The way it worked out with us is she had to relocate to Boston for work. So now I'm in New York and she's in Boston. And again, it's one of those, what are we doing, right? Like, are you staying in New York and making this long distance, or are you moving to Boston? I'm not a long distance relationship type of nigga. Like, we either together or we not together. You feel me? I already knew how that would have worked out. So I ended up relocating with work. I transferred offices at that point. I had left Chase, got a different job, went to Boston with her. And that's kind of where it was like, oh, shit. Like, okay, so he is serious. Like, we talk about it now all the time, and I laugh at her. I'd be like, man, you tried to leave me when you moved to Boston. Yeah, like, But she, again, wasn't sure. And that, you know, that's the beauty of the relationship, because now we're able to talk about that and really say, you know, like, well, at that point, you know, I didn't know if this would get serious. But at that point, I knew me moving to Boston, it was like, all right, I started saving for a ring. Because at that point, I was 5 years in. I had relocated twice, and I already saw the potential of, like, yo, like, we could really shake the block. So,
and what was those things? Like, what, because it's, of course, you have that team aspect from playing sports. You started watching other families build that dynamic that's going to make sure that they win. Like, what was it about her and you that you realized this is going to be a successful team?
She's fine as hell. I'm not even going to hold
that
you.
That was important. That,
I know the first thing people say is like, oh, looks aren't everything. And I think you a damn lie. Like, how they say money can't buy happiness, you a fucking lie. You might not, I don't know what your version of happiness is, but, you know, when it comes to looks, man, like, you got to ask yourself, why do niggas cheat, right? Like, why do niggas cheat? Niggas cheat because they don't like their girl. You feel me? So it's like, yo, for me, like, she's Trinidadian and she was gorgeous. You know what I mean? I feel like that's important. That's important. I hate to put it that way, but that's important.
You don't want to be the bad guy, but it's clear.
That's important. So now, in addition to her being that fine, bro, she's even smarter than that. And for me, it was like, yo, you're so fine and you're so smart. This is gonna work.
One thing about a guy, man,
yeah,
he is never gonna slip on that.
You know the vibes. So those two things alone, it was just like, yo, and the most important was we have fun. Like, we was friends. Like, we, bro, I swear to God, we have more fun together than niggas have with their best friend. Like, we just, we have a great relationship. So it's like, with that being said, you know, it made sense.
Sign up. Yeah. Now, when you guys say your relationship and the bond that you guys have, how was all that established through the college experience of trusting in each other? Like,
yeah, I mean, imagine dating a nigga that's 6'8", a basketball player, having his way.
He's up.
Having motion, you know? So it was just like, yo, like, you know, we definitely had our ups and downs. Nothing ever detrimental or anything like that. It was just like we learned a lot. Like, we went through every phase of a relationship that you could think of, you know what I mean? Like, we went through all of them in a good way, you know what I mean? Like, so that first 5 years was our hardest five, but then, like, the next five was, like, the aftermath portion, which meaning it's not like we had anything that we had to get through or anything. It was more so now saying, okay, how do we make this last forever? Like, because now we're looking at marriage. Now we're looking at, you know, we're engaged for a year. Now we're married for our first year. And, you know, marriage, your first year is your toughest. So it's like that next year five to 10 was the hardest, really, because it's just like, shit, if I wanted to break up with you, I couldn't even do it. Like,
it was just like, we're done.
Yeah. So, you know. But it was cool, man. Like,
what kind of fear did you have in that process of trusting in her? And
you want to know what's funny? I think my hardest thing to accomplish was, like, you know, just really, like, we're both only children. So it's like our attitudes was terrible. We did premarital counseling for a few sessions just because it made sense. It was like, well, let's just do this and see what happens, right? We didn't need it. We just was like, let's see. And that right there helped us understand each other way more. Like, she taught us some values that, like, still to this day we practice, you know what I mean? And it was just kind of like, oh, okay.
So would you recommend that for marriages?
Absolutely. All my friends that got married after we did, because we were the first, I told all of them, like, yo, go to premarital counseling. It's not saying that you need it. It's just like you get to be honest with somebody and, like, really, like, tell them who you are and how you are. And I think the therapist, you know, as long as they're good, they're going to tell you what y'all need, like, what worked for y'all.
It's like getting a playbook.
Literally.
You know, that I don't think people really value how important that is.
Nah, I'll tell you real quick, like, you know, my wife and I were only children, so we would argue with each other just because it was like, we just had bad attitudes. Fuck you too. And then come here, give me a hug. Like, you feel me? The lady said to us, yo, you guys get mad at each other, give yourself 24 hours. Like, if one of you want to talk about it within 24 hours, you always need to talk. So it was like, I bet you have an argument and you talk about it within 24 hours. Most of the time you have an argument and they want to just talk about it, or you guys just talk about it nonstop and you continue to argue. Before you know it, you started here arguing and you all the way over here arguing. But if you wait within 24 hours, give yourself a few hours to balance out, now you go from this to directly to here and you get to talk about the problem. And that was something that I thought was phenomenal, because who knows? We might have continued to bump heads all the time our way because we were doing it where it was like we were just arguing from point A to point Z, if you will.
Just have something to prove.
Yeah. So that's something that, you know, I took to heart with me, and it was just like, I bet.
So leaving New York, going to Boston, now, what was the Boston experience like? How long did you guys stay up there?
Bro, my diversity is crazy. I'm not going to hold you. Like, I like Boston because it's a great city, but, like, it's some racist shit. If you ask me, I don't want nobody from there to feel no type of way, but, like, for me, I dealt with some racist bullshit. You know, going to nice restaurants, he was looking at me crazy. Driving a nice car, cop pulled me over one time and said, whose car is this and why do you have it? Because I work a good 9-to-5, sir. Like, what you...
I earned it.
Yeah. So, you know, for me, it was definitely like, that was the first time somebody called me a nigga. Like, that was white. Like, he pulled up on me and said, you nigger. And I was just like, wait, what? So it gave me that balance, but it also gave me the ability to adjust. You know what I mean? I was only there for like a good 2 years, 3 years. I was out of there. Like, it was just too cold. And it was like, everything closes at 1 a.m. And I'm a nightlife person. Mm-hmm. Like, as you can see.
Clearly.
I'm a nightlife person. So that was that.
So how long you guys stayed in Boston for?
I think it was like 3 years, maybe. Yeah, 3 years. And then we transferred back to New York and lived there for a while.
How'd you guys end up in Palm Beach County?
So my mom, in like 2008 or so, she went from living in Los Angeles to basically she moved to Florida. excuse me. She went to Florida. So now, like junior year, senior year of college, instead of going home to New York or Connecticut, I'm now coming home to Palm Beach. I've been living in Palm Beach with, you know, what my mom has from like 2008-ish. So it's like, you know, by then I'm 21, 22, 23. So I'm 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, and so on. Like throughout the years from 2008, I'm spending more and more time out here. Like I'm realizing like, wait a minute, Florida's hot all the time. Like I'm in Florida in February, it's hot. I'm spending Christmas here, it's hot. So that's how we came to Palm Beach.
So what were you guys, I forgot to ask you, what were you both doing up there? You were working in the banking industry?
I was in finance, yeah, and my wife works in finance as well. So, you know, I had to go back to like from 2008 to 17, I was living, I definitely moved back to Atlanta. Like 2017, I moved back to Atlanta. I personally moved to Palm Beach last year. Like once I realized that I was going to open crew here is when I officially left Atlanta and moved my family down here.
And how did you get into, you know, wanting to open up crew or even the whole concept? And
I owned one in Atlanta.
How did that even come about?
One of my friends at the time, he was my trainer, and he was just like, yo, it's a lounge, it's a franchise. Like, let's look into it. We looked into it. I knew of Crew, and it was a little lounge. Like, you know, it was a lounge. So it was like restaurant business, they say it's tricky, but I felt like because it's a franchise, they got the whole playbook. You can't fail. Like, follow the playbook, and you can't fail. How much you make is based off of you and how you run shit, but, you know, follow the playbook. And I'm a structured type of person, so, you know, that was perfect for me. So we bought into the franchise. We opened up a franchise, a location with a bowling alley, like 32 lanes. It was like a 25,000 square foot facility. Word, like, here I am owning a bowling alley. Word, like, having motion. You know, business is business, so you always learn from business. I don't want to get into the details of it, but the bottom line is that venture ended abruptly, unsuddenly, right? I finished that, and it was just like, you know, damn, I lost a whole, like, I lost the play. Mm-hmm. Got to figure out how to run it back, right?
You were still in banking then, or you were done with
it? I was still in my corporate job. Yeah, I wasn't in banking. Now I was in finance. Different aspect of finance. But yeah, man, like by the time I had my corporate job, I had worked corporate America for like 10 years at that point. Like I walked away from my job that I was with for like 8 years or so. Left them, went into business for myself, did that for a year. That was 22. Ran it back, like closed up in May, and in July, my mom has said to me, like, bro, like my wife has said to me, like, bro, like look in Florida, like let's see if you could put the play together in Florida. So between my parents and myself, like we was able to open up a crew in Palm Beach, and I was able to do it in less than a year.
So let's get a little bit into that, man. So one of the reasons that I wanted to have this conversation with you, man. So I went to Crew one night. It was Dice's birthday party. Mm-hmm. You know, she's someone I'll come outside for. And I'm watching, you know, I'm very low-key. I fall back. I'm sitting out there, but I'm studying everything.
Facts.
And I'm watching this 6'8" brother wipe the counter down and move around and take out the garbage and do the... And I was excited about that because I know what I did when I own lounge.
Right.
I know what I did when I own restaurants. I know what I know what it takes.
Facts.
Because you get a lot of people that get into this business and, you know, they love the fame.
Mm-hmm.
It's a high that, you know, you can't really explain.
Talk
but
about
if,
clout. Shit.
Yeah. You heavy. You know, you move around motion. Mm-hmm. Heavy motion when you own something in that capacity. I've experienced it, but I also know the importance of staying focused and still make sure your business is running.
Yeah.
But you're saying, yeah, like it's simple, but that's not normal in this industry.
So
my question is, why is it so important for you to still have your hands on and still doing the things that you're doing in your business?
It's a cash business, man. You know, if you don't watch it yourself, and you, I think people get so comfortable that they allow people to do things for them. And, you know, sticky fingers, man. Like, this business is so fast that it's, you can still easily, you know? So, you know, things could go left. My vision could go left. My experience could go left. I mean, clubs are dangerous to an extent. Lounges are dangerous because you never know who's coming in to get how drunk. So, you know, just got to pay attention. I think a little while ago when I said, like, you know, watching people from afar, you know what I mean? Like, going to Morehouse and knowing to still stick to the script and do what you need to do, right? Like, owning a business is the same thing. Like, you know, if you don't do it, who's going to do it? They're not going to do it your way. You know, like, we could be friends no matter how long. We could be family no matter how long. But you don't know my vision and I don't know yours. So it's like, for me, it's like, you know, I've worked in corporate America and I've been friends with some of the most elite people in the company, you know? Like, I've had the CEO of companies say, man, like, I know one day you're going to be in my shoes, or, you know, you look like the CEO of the company. Like, keep pushing. So I've held a high position in corporate America. So for me, it's like, I've also watched that show Undercover Boss. What happens with that is like, the CEO never knows what to do in their company. I started in, like, the paper processing position. I swear to God, like, 6 months later, it was like, nah, you got to come to this side with us. And from there, I was, like, on the management side of things. I was treated as a manager even when I didn't have a management position. Why? Because of the way my work ethic is. Like, bro, that title shit is cool, but what's a title if you're not really aware of what you're doing in your company, or if you're not aware of what you, you know, you got going on? Like, the CEO will never know how to process the paperwork, but they know that shit got to get processed because of some numbers that they look on a Excel sheet or whatever. Man, fuck that. I want to know all of it.
But where does that come from? Is it, like, because you said you made a great point, was from the Morehouse days.
Probably just me being me, man. I want to be involved in a little bit of everything. Like, yeah, I am an only child, so it's like I like things my way. And my way can be your way, because if I'm open enough to talk to you and learn something from you and take on to that, then your way now became my way, which, again, I'm just evolving. So that's how I really look at it.
And then also, your wife's involved with the business.
Yeah, so my wife still has her corporate job, but she's my assistant, for real. Like, she definitely is 100% involved. We just run the spot together. I mean, she knows what I need, and she's a very good support system for that.
And that bond and that trust, like how is it working with your wife in that capacity?
Again, me and her have always been like this. We've literally worked from home for years. So, you know, we literally, like, our office, we shared a table, like a desk like this. I sat at one side, she sat at the other side. So it was like, I feel like we've always worked together. We just had different companies. You know, we started off working for I joined her company back when I first started in corporate America. And, you know, when she branched off and left and went elsewhere, we still worked in the same office, worked from home. That was COVID years. Like, from COVID on, it was like, damn, we here 100% of the time. So I feel like we had learned how to work together from just then.
Did you guys have children together?
Have a six-year-old. We had a kid in 2017. So I've been a parent now for the past 6 years.
How's parenting?
Parenting is very interesting. You're learning every day. It's interesting to watch your kid grow up and do the things that they do. Like, I've been blessed to literally be there every single day of his life, unless, you know, we were traveling or I was away for that matter. But it's just a blessing, man. Like, to watch this little human learn, like, literally to learn. Like, it's literally like he knows nothing and he's just learning.
How important is patience in that process of learning?
Woo! Child, man, me and my kid both need patience. Patience is probably the biggest thing. I literally was at soccer practice last night and I left practice talking to my grandmother about patience. Like, I need to figure out what other methods can I teach him for patience and myself, right? You want your kid to be elite and everything they do, but everything takes time. So, you know, with patience and a kid, you being there every day, you're going to figure it out, because you now got patience for the kid, you got patience for yourself, you got to figure out patience with your wife. Like, so it's a balance.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to get into. Like, so with a child, a wife, building a nightlife business, which is no joke, the balance in that? Like, what tips could you tell someone that's in that industry or wanting to be in that industry?
Man, it's not for everybody. People get into the industry because they think it's the glitz and the glamour. And it's just like, bro, a lot of people fold because they're not even built for it in the first place. So I really can't give you a tip other than, hey, if you want to try it, try it. But give it your all. Like, it's like on some basketball shit. If you're going to play sports, like, give it your all. You know, like, that shit got to be in you no matter what you do. Because I could tell you to do it and I could give you all the plays and you could be like, bet. You go do it. You might have the cash to do it, whatever, whatever. And, you know, you might not have any success. You might have more success. I don't know how to tell a person not to do or to do something. All I can say is do what you believe and put your all into that shit. That way, if you fail, you can say, well, at least I tried. And I think that's the basketball aspect for me. Like, shit, I practiced all week. We had this game on Friday. We won. I bet it worked. We lost. Shit, how bad did we lose? Because if we lose by 1 point, that's a harder loss than losing by 100. Because if you lose by 1 point, that means you ain't give it your all. Like, come on. 1 point, 10 points. Shit, you lose by 20 points. You ain't give it your all. Like, you fucked up somewhere along the lines.
And what we got to do to go back and fix it. Do you take that same measure with everything else you do in life?
Absolutely. I talk to my staff. I'd be like, yo, tonight's basketball game is Friday night. Friday Night Lights, you know, we know we're playing a superstar team. What does that mean? That means we're going to have a lot of guests in here. We're sold out. That means, yo, we got to win. Like, we got to win. Like, we got bills to pay, but we got families to feed. We got to win. Like, we got to win. It's a basketball game. I talk to my staff as if we're basketball players.
And what is it like working in that space? Because I think one thing I've learned, let me give you my example, that I've learned in working with certain staff, especially when I was in the food and beverage space, it's not like they're your children, but it's a lot of teaching. It's a lot of patience.
No, my wife and I call them our children. I'm not even going to hold you. I'm
trying to make it
nice. Our kids, like, they, what's up, dad? What's up, y'all? Like, because they're 21, 22, 23, 26. Then I have, like, Dice, like you mentioned, who is 35 or 6. My bad.
A little bit more wisdom.
But, you know, you're just dealing with, and majority of my staff is, they're women. You know, I got like 4 males on the team, 2 cooks and 2 guys. And then, you know, the rest are women. And it's probably like 15 of them now. At a time, it was probably 25, 30 of them. So it's just dealing with that and dealing with the aspect of just managing people, bro. Like, if you're a cool nigga, people gonna fuck with you. I tell people all the time, like, we don't gotta be best friends and we don't gotta, you know, get along every single 5 seconds. You're gonna have your day, I'm gonna have my day, but just be respectful. If you could be respectful no matter what the situation is, bro, I could step on your shoe and fuck them up. Hey, my bad. I'm sorry about that, brother, man. Like, you see what I'm saying? Just be respectful. If you're respectful with anything and anybody, you know, if you're having a bad day and you come in the spot and it's like, hey, I'm in a pissed off mood. Hey, man, just be respectful. Like, you need some space. Cool. Like, now's not the time. Cool. So I think that's how I deal with it for the most part, or try.
So do you truly enjoy the nightlife space?
Absolutely, bro. Before owning the lounge, I was in the lounge spending all my fucking money. Word. Now it's like, it's cool. I think I like the nightlife part of it. You know, my family and friends would tell you, like, yo, this is the perfect career for you. And it's like, yeah, and I wasn't even chasing this. Like, it kind of just literally landed on my lap. But, you know, I like it because it's in me. It's who I am. I like to have a good time. I like to show people to have a good time. And my friends, I'm the friend that you call, like, yo, what I'm doing for my birthday? Like, where are we going? Or if we out of town, it's like, Steph is going to know all the spots. He done already found where we need to be to have a good time. So for me, you would think, oh, he owns the spot because he wanted the money for it. And me, it's like, nah, I really want people to have a good time.
Really,
like,
enjoy that.
I'm that nigga that, like, yeah, you might go hang out with your friends and have a good time. But, bro, you hang out with me, we're going to have a time.
We're going to have a good time.
Yeah.
And how do you and your wife create that balance within that?
Bro, she like to have a good time too. Also, yeah, so. My wife is working with me on the weekends. You know, my mom is a great help with my kids. So, you know, like, my wife and I are on the same type of time. It's not like she hates the club and I love the club, so we never see each other. Nah, like, week time, she's a mom, and weekend, she's a wife, you know what I mean? So it's a good balance. And again, that doesn't work for everybody. So in most cases now, you know, people own a lounge and, well, I don't never see you, or you with all these people or women, like, right? that fucks up a relationship. But in my case, it's my wife and I are at the spot together, so it works out.
So you guys are still, and it's still a bond, which you guys have anyway.
So I'm still in there, you know, wiping tables and dancing and shit. Yeah. Some ass.
Man, you really have a good time, man. I appreciate that. When it comes to your business and life balance, and it's not tip, I'm just trying to see, how do you keep that balance? Because I know it's difficult. When it comes to like that, like what do you do to take off? Because preseason is important. So I wonder, what do you do in preseason in this space?
For me, you know, just balance, man. Like you're going to work all the time, but you got to give yourself some balance. You know, nowadays we've learned what mental health is and how that affects you when you're straining on your job. My corporate job, like, bro, like it's taught me that no matter how much work you got to take some time for yourself. You got 24 hours in a day and everybody won't work that 24 hours in a day. Not me. Like, I need at least an hour or two to be to myself. Go get some dinner, play with my kid, just be regular. I told you before we started the podcast, like, I keep my phone on silent unless it's during the day and I need to keep it on because I'm expecting calls or I can't miss a call. Otherwise, you know, like just you gotta stay true to yourself, man. Like you gotta really, I work out on a couple every day or every couple of days, you know what I mean? Like you gotta find a hobby that you like and really just lock in. You gotta, you know, do what you like to do and say fuck anything else. Cause sometimes, you know, like people don't do that, you know? And then being in this business, you don't make no bread. Like I know people think like, oh, cool, he made mad money.
He's a billionaire.
Nigga.
If you know what it costs.
I low-key want to go back to my 9 to 5. Yeah. I might add it to 9 to 3 or something, you feel me? So for me, it's just all about balance.
And so what's next for you with this? Do you want to go into, you want to stay in this space? You want to open up more? Location?
I don't know, man. I would love to get involved and open up another if I see fit. I would love to get crew lit enough to where it could run on its own. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's the immediate goal. A lot of people have been asking me, like, what's next? And I'm just like, man, just trying to make it to tomorrow for right now.
I'm enjoying. And you also enjoying this process.
And I'm enjoying myself. Like, right now, like I said, I'm 37. I turn 38 in another month or two. You know, like, I'm just really enjoying myself right now, taking it for what it is. Like, at the end of the day, like, you know, I came to West Palm in the most humble way. And my business is, regardless of numbers-wise success, I feel like it's popular. Like, people know about crew. Mm-hmm. So with people knowing about it, it's like, all right, step one in this process is people liking you, right? Like, you got to make people want to come to your shit. And for me, like, it looks like people want to come to my shit. So far, so good. Knock on wood. Absolutely. So it's like, you know what I mean? For me, I'm just taking it all in and trying to, like, now make it a successful business, because now you're getting into the numbers. Like, I'm a numbers guy, so crew is crew at nighttime, but during the daytime, crew is a bunch of Excel sheets, believe it or not. Like, I promise you, people would never know, like, what goes into it from my perspective, especially being a franchise, because you got rules to follow and you got standards to follow. P&Ls every day, P&Ls every week, meeting with my accountant, like, my CPA. You know, it's a whole business. I run my shit like a corporation. Like, I wanted to be the CEO of a company, and here I am the CEO of a company. I wanted to be the CEO of a Fortune 500. That was my goal from the time I went to Morehouse on, right? And I feel like I'm the CEO of a Fortune 500 because Crew Lounge is majority Black-owned franchise. It's the fastest growing Black-owned franchise. You see what I'm saying? Like, crew is a lot more than just going to the club. Like, I hate hear that in Florida. There's only one now, but we're about to expand. Like, we're going to Wynwood soon. We're months away from opening in Wynwood. I mean, we're going to open in Tampa. We're going to open in Orlando. Like, crew is a lot more than what people may think it is. You know what I mean? Like, it's a whole brand and a whole culture. I mean, you go to Texas and it's like Chick-fil-A. You go to the Houston and Texas, the crew in Houston, and you're going to get that same experience.
I think I see one in D.C. or Baltimore. I forgot where I was traveling.
Yeah,
it was in
D.C. So it's like, you could be out of town and know, like, shit, they got a crew here. Oh, we going there because what we get from the one at home, this is home for somebody. So for me, it's like I'm a part of a Fortune 100 company when it comes to nightlife. If you ask me, shit, we might be top 10 if you really want my opinion, because Absolutely. Shit, I'm not live, but shit, you put all of us together, like we have emotion.
Strong. Yeah, absolutely. And the emotion. Food, you know, the culture there is amazing. from the atmosphere, the people, the DJs, the staff. The food is also a good experience. You know, facts. You guys didn't slack on the quality of food also. Yeah,
and that comes from a playbook from the franchise. And then that comes from my mom and her hospitality experience. Mm. Bro, if the food is good, people will come back. That's our motto.
Yeah, because I've heard about it good, first because
yeah.
of the food.
Yeah, if the food and the service is good, they'll come back. So now from a marketing perspective, that's our next focus. Like, get the food out there. Like, everybody know the drinks is hit. Everybody know the crew drinks is hit. You go ahead, yeah, you get two drinks. You calling your ex, like, right. What's
yeah,
up?
Yeah, yeah.
You want fire, you want link up? What we doing?
What we doing?
Literally. So
trust,
it's
a long story.
So the food and the experience is what my next focus is, to like really try and push, like, yo, I mean, at the end of the day, man, I think, you know, I'm associated of being a young spot. Bro, you'd be surprised. Like, we got an ID scanner and we use the data from it. You know, like, a lot of people are 41 to 60 years old.
Yeah.
Last week, lady came in, celebrated her 60th.
Nice.
I told the DJ, play a little old school barbecue music. Bro, she came up to us. She said, yo, I came here to hear some rap music, and I don't want to hear this
fucking
cookout
shit. I don't want
to
hear the senior song.
So it's like, oh, okay, bet. That's dope, so people know what they come to crew for an experience. They come literally to catch a vibe, and that's our slogan. Come catch a vibe with us. You know what I mean?
What do you consider success? You know, how do you define success?
Man, success is definitely nothing to do with money. Success is overall how you carry yourself, how you feel about yourself. Like, bro, I could be in my darkest times. Like, I could be in my darkest times and you'll never know it. That's success. Being happy. Like, waking up and knowing that, all right, I'm giving my all. I'm doing my best. I'm rethinking things. I'm applying the pressure. I'm putting that shit on and looking good. I'm getting my hair cut. Like, success is feeling good. Like, if you don't feel good, you're not going to be good. You feel me? Like, if you're in a relationship and you don't feel good about yourself, your partner's not going to feel good about you either. So everything is all within yourself. Like, and that's success for me. Like, if you're a happy person, you're successful. You don't got to have a great 9-to-5 or make a lot of money to be successful. Nah, you don't got to drive a nice car. Like, now the things that you add that you like, if you know you have a list of 10 things that you like and you go and get all 10 of those things, you're successful. You succeeded what you wanted. The problem is what else do you want? And now you're chasing more. That's cool, but have at least a foundation of things that make you happy and go from there.
Last thing, man, is there anything that we didn't cover that I didn't ask you that you would want to share with the people?
The biggest thing for me is just really the business. You know, the background story is cool, but for me, it's really the business. You know what I mean? Like, Crew Lounge, we're located in Northwood. It's a Black-owned business. You know, it's not one of those Black-owned businesses that half-asses things. You know, we really move, like I said, like a corporation. You know, regardless of what people may hear, oh, there was a fight, or oh, there was this, or oh, there was that. That's not me, and that's not what we represent. That's just niggas being niggas at the end of the day, and people being people, you know what I mean? There's a white bar across the street. They have so many fights across the street, but it doesn't get broadcast, or it doesn't, like, get looked upon. They, you know what I mean? So for me, like, I really hope that people take away and say, like, Crew really is for us and by us, you know what I mean? Like, it's literally for the people. It's somewhere to go to have a fun, safe time, eat good food, hear really good music, smoke a good hookah, and slide. Like, go back home and say, shit, we going back to Crew again tonight, tomorrow night. You feel me? Because we had so much fun. Celebrate your birthday with us. Celebrate breaking up with your ex with us. Like, whatever you got. Like, bring your sneaky link. Like, bro, it's a vibe. For real.
You know, one thing I want to definitely leave out with, our process, right? So it was important for me to share information. It's also important for me, like, you learned from the couples that you met and through college, so that the person that actually is going through their journey to understand you had diversity. You know, if you've been through adversity, you know, you've been through ups and downs in life, and you're still working on building something bigger than you.
Facts.
You know, so the connection of that, and also the people that might hear something wild or whatever it is, good or whatever, about Crew, they could identify with the man. Because a lot of time you go into these businesses and you meet different business owners for, like, hey, nice to meet you. But you never really get a chance to meet the person.
Right.
You know, so we want to be able to create this platform that, man, that Stefan's a good dude, man. And he's running this successful business. I want to learn more about him. So once they see this, they walk up to you and be like, man, I appreciate what you've done. Because they understand it wasn't just a cakewalk.
Yeah, you know, not at all.
That your wife gave you that 5 years to make it happen, man.
Listen.
It's been real, man. No, I appreciate you, man. I definitely appreciate you coming by, man, sharing your story, giving some value. You know, I have a couple of things that I believe we're going to do well with, man. I have some ideas in my mind, man.
Smooth, man. I look forward to it. And I thank you for having me. For
absolutely,
real.
My brother. At Connecticut Life.
Yes, sir.
And especially Atlanta.